Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. Wendy Wilson will be joining us right after the market report. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Interesting day, another interesting day in the markets. I don't think news reports could get much worse, and yet paper markets love bad news. Gold didn't like the good news either, or the bad news. Gold was down $1,270 for gold at $1,244. Silver maintained the $16 level, $16.32 for silver, up 0.04. Platinum was down one at 1,004, and palladium was down four at 546. The USDX today was trading obviously stronger, 0.70 at 94.74. Crude oil was down 0.57 at 41.60. So once again, gold was down $1,270 at $1,244. Silver up 0.04 at $16.32. And the paper markets today, the paper markets today, as I said, they love the negative news. The Dow, we'll talk about the negative news after our segment with Wendy Wilson. The Dow was up 186 points at 17,908. You have the NASDAQ up 75 at 49.47, and the S&P up 20 at 2,082. It didn't move the 10-year yield. That was down 0.02 at 1.76%. The euro got hit pretty good today. Down almost a full point, 0.93 at down 93 at 1.13. And of course, the world markets pretty much performed the same way as ours did. So we'll talk about the markets. Wendy Wilson, she is here to join us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al. How's everybody?
Good.
I thought we'd talk about some things that have come up in the news lately about really it's diet versus drug, and actually consumers are being warned to be careful, very careful, even not even use their supplements. Well, you know, I think it's interesting how the public thinks, you know, who oversees the product market. You know, a lot of people think the FDA has official approval over the food additives and preservatives and toxic drugs, which supposedly they do. But they're not so overly involved in approving spices, foods, and herbs unless there's a problem that crops up. So there's a big difference between the FDA's actual function and what the people think the FDA actually does. So did you know, Al, the FDA doesn't test anything before it enters the market? Did you know that?
No, I wasn't aware that they didn't test anything, but I knew that a lot of the tests are the responsibility of the drug manufacturer. At least I believe that's true. Is that correct or not?
That is correct. They do not test food. They don't test spices. They don't test herbs, supplements, or drugs. The FDA relies on drug companies to test their products and to be truthful with their reports. So
well,
drugs
they wouldn't
are.
Fib.
No, they wouldn't do that. Well, now, drugs are not supplements and vice versa. However, there's this now effort to cloud that issue. And according to Gretchen Dubue, she's the executive director for the Alliance for Natural Health, she gave this analogy when people are calling a supplement a drug. She says it's like calling monopoly money legal currency. So, to make matters worse, we have some officials, let's say the U.S. Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. She's been warning consumers about the dangers of nutritional supplements. Lynch has misguided consumers by stating that the FDA does not test supplements for approval. Well, the truth is the FDA doesn't test anything for approval. So, consumers were thinking, well, everything's tested but supplements, the way she's presenting it. So either Lynch is ignorant of how the FDA works, or she's intentionally misleading the public. So there was this Harvard study, though, Al, Melanie. The Alliance for Natural Health says Harvard University did a study on the percentages of the FDA-approved drugs and the health hazards that are associated with them. According to their study, prescribed medications are responsible for 1.9 million hospitalizations, 2.74 million serious adverse reactions, 128,000 deaths each year. In comparison, Americans take about 60 billion doses of dietary supplements a year. So the adverse reactions to supplements are minuscule in comparison, and they usually happen when people are using their supplements with other medicines over the counter prescription. So here's a better perspective. Gretchen Dubue says this. She goes, "You're five times more likely, Al, Melanie, to be killed by a lightning strike, 581 times more likely to be killed in a boating accident. You're 98,000 times more likely to be killed by an FDA-approved and properly prescribed pharmaceutical drug than to be killed by a dietary supplement." Yeah?
I understand.
It's
bigger
picture.
It's all about the money, and that's what they're concerned about, of course.
Well, Dubue was saying that, you know, the supplement industry still produces the safest products that humans ingest. So it's an obvious comparison. Supplements are pretty much the safest thing people are putting in their bodies, actually. So if consumers are using actually whole food supplements, according to statistics, compared to fractionalized or synthetic versions, the likelihood of any adverse reaction on a whole food supplement is practically zero. Okay? So, well, we want to check with the health experts on this, and the health or the risk experts, I should say, because there's a whole industry committed to evaluating risk and putting a price on it, right, Al?
I guess.
Okay. Well, the need for malpractice insurance was born in 1374 when medical malpractice became a common occurrence in the British courts, in which, you know, most of the cases were dismissed. So malpractice law was supposed to handle fraud or neglect resulting in an injury. So by 1794, which is 5 years after President George Washington's inauguration, malpractice lawsuits were being heard in the U.S. courts, and they were being entered as a breach of contract. But according to the 2000 JAMA Journal and the 1997 Journal for Community Health, The word malpractice comes from the Latin term malapraxis, and it was coined by a British legal scholar, Sir William Blackstone, in 1765. So according to Blackstone, a malpractice lawsuit is really claiming a private wrong and is not considered a breach of contract. So it really comes down to failure to do your job in a private capacity. So the medical malpractice insurance industry really bases the grounds for damages off the medical standards. So the premiums that, you know, physicians will pay for their malpractice insurance will vary from state to state and medical specialty. But to give you an idea, according to the MPMLC Network of Insurance Agents and Underwriters, premiums are higher in a weak economy. So general rates premiums range from $20,000 to $200,000 a year for specialists and surgeons. General practitioners tend to pay about, well, less than $6,500 a year. So then I got to thinking, what about chiropractors? What kind of premium do they pay for malpractice insurance? Well, it all depends on the risk and how the underwriters look at it. And apparently, the risk is relatively low because the average premium for a chiropractor across the country is less than $500 a year. There is no malpractice insurance for nutritional experts or herbalists because the nutritional therapy or food therapy is not underwritten because the insurance industry says there's no risk. What do you think of that, Al?
I think it's pretty impressive. I think it's surprising. It's a kind of admission that I wouldn't expect. I wouldn't expect to hear that. I mean, that should be something that's kind of concealed. That knowledge should not easily, shouldn't be spread around from the perspective of the government, big pharma, whatever. They want you
well,
to know that.
Well, when you start having
safe, they won't even. Then nobody, the insurance agent, if the insurance agents won't insure the risk because they don't see one. What
yeah.
an extraordinary admission.
Well, I know. Well, if you see death certificates showing up in droves stating death caused by herbs or supplements of this nature, then you'll see the insurance underwriters line up to cash in. Well, there was a poll taken. 300 million Americans in the U.S., over half are taking supplements on an everyday basis. So according to the Annals of Internal Medicine, the journals encourage medical physicians to discourage their patients from using supplements as a way to preserve their health. They state there's no studies to support that vitamins or minerals work. And I say, are they serious? Because there's tons of research that proves nutrition is the basis for health. Dr. Andrew Saul, for one, has discussed no fewer than 19 studies proving a strong correlation between supplement use and reduced risk of cardiovascular disease and cancer. So this 2013 Gallup poll showed that the higher the education level of an American and also older Americans are the ones using more supplements. They also discovered younger and younger Americans are starting to take supplements starting at age 18. So I say, well, what kind of supplements are they taking? Well, they're taking mineral, protein, and vitamin supplements. So this poll said 68% of senior citizens take supplements, and people between the ages of 50 and 64, 50% of them are taking supplements. So the poll was pointing out there's a lot of money at stake here between supplements and drugs. And you know what else is at stake? The health and lifestyle of Americans is at stake because nature is on trial. Well, here's what Dr. Andrew Saul, now he's the editor of Orthomolecule Medical News Service. He says NBC's supplement bashing headline article displays an ignorance of clinical nutrition that is difficult to ignore. So here's a brief list of the prominent medical journals that did show scientific evidence that supplements have a positive impact, improve, and protect our health. So the JAMA Journal in 2012 said multivitamin supplements are found to reduce cancer risk by 8%. The internal...
By what percentage?
8%.
Okay.
And then they said the International Journal for Cancer in 2011 said an increased level of vitamin D associates with 15% reduction in colorectal cancer and also 11% reduction in breast cancer incidence. The American Heart Association, the American Heart Journal in 2011 said if you increase your vitamin C, it's associated with a 9% reduction in heart failure mortality. They estimate 216,000 lives could be spared each year. The International Journal for Cancer in 2011 said that vitamin E, while NBC said vitamin E is no good, doesn't prevent cancer or heart disease, their studies found that natural vitamin E decreases prostate tumor formation by a respectable 75%. And the International Journal for Cancer in 2008 said natural vitamin E reduces your lung cancer risk by 61%. So this nonsense that there's no scientific evidence is just hogwash, because it is out there. So really, we have an industry supported by treating disease, and so they want to limit their risk of losing revenue. And I think they'll do whatever necessary to prevent that. So I think misinformation, lies, and scientific fraud to protect their bottom line is no surprise to me. And anyone out there that thinks that the medical industry wouldn't do such a thing, I just say, you know, go open that Bible and read 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, for the love of money is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So now if the tobacco industry can lie about the safety of their products, so can the pharmaceutical and medical industry, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
What does the – you said earlier in the program –
yeah.
That the FDA doesn't really test any drugs
they
or
don't.
Supplements. Okay.
They test not a thing. They don't pay to have anything tested.
What do they do? What do they regulate?
Well, what they can do is they approve whatever is submitted to them. And
they provide a rubber stamp then.
Yeah. And they could fast track approval status. Okay. So in other words, usually it takes 5 years to get a vaccine approved, but if you want to apply for the cut to the chase, you know, the chutes and ladders version,
yep.
It only takes 6 weeks.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Now how can they convince the public that if somebody's got enough money or they really want to do this, we can get this thing approved in 6 weeks. On the other hand, for most of them, it's going to take 5 years. How can that be possible? If you've got the technology that can determine something's good, bad, or indifferent in 6 weeks, what is your reason for taking 5 years under most circumstances?
Well, an excellent question. But I think it's all about the money. I think you're right.
Of course.
You know, and I often wonder why people would settle for a black box warning on their prescriptions rather than tapping into the power of a better lifestyle and medicinal herbs. Because God can't lie. He said herbs are here for the service of man. And I truly believe when we fill our bodies up with pharmaceutical toxins, I think that grieves the Holy Spirit, which is, you know, the temple. Our body's the temple for the Holy Spirit.
I agree.
So I think
it's
at some point.
It's not just a temple. It's an image of God.
Right, and so at some point we're all going to...
that image of God, you're expressing your contempt for God, all right?
Well,
you can pollute it with alcohol, tobacco, illegal drugs, the rest of this sort of thing.
Right.
You're asking for a problem here. It's not a surprise to me on a spiritual level that people who use tobacco get cancer. To me, it's a spiritual situation, at least in part. I consider that. I'm not telling you that this is a religion thing you should believe, but I'm saying it's something that crosses my mind.
Well,
Why don't you give us some contact information? And the point being, Wendy provides herbs and natural products that can help you maintain your health. And what we're just hearing from this report is it is, as an industry goes, supplements of this sort are the safest in the world.
Yep.
Right? You really ought to consider what she's got here. Go ahead, give us a little contact information.
Well, we do help people detoxify, so they can remove a lot of pharmaceutical residues, heavy metals. So one of our specialties is detoxing. And I think at one point when we stand before God and he asks us what we did to preserve the image of God, the only right answer is everything I could.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
We do have products to help you out and boost your immune system. The number to call is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit us online at thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, guys. See you later.
All right, Wendy. Thank you. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Stop in. Visit. Do a little business with her. I'm Alfred Addis. We'll be back with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
And as usual, I want to remind the listeners to visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, The American Survival, and you can listen to these programs archived and on a daily and longer-term basis. Just go to the radio page to listen 4 o'clock Eastern Time live. And for all your gold and silver coin needs, we have some great prices. We're still continuing the specials that we've been running on the Mint State 61, $20 Liberties, and St. Gaudens. And also, I took another peek at the U.S. Mint today to see how many silver eagles so far this month. And it was 2.1 million silver eagles. They didn't update their numbers earlier in the week. Didn't look like it moved much. And so I was surprised when I saw that they had tacked on a million 1-ounce silver American Eagles that were sold. So it's on track to get up in over 4 million for the month. It'll probably track closer to 5 million for April. So lots of you are out there buying silver. We've got some great prices for our Silver Eagles. We've got some of the lowest prices in Silver Eagles in the industry. So give us a call, 800-375-4188. Well, there's a few reports out today that moved markets. You had sales at U.S. retailers. That unexpectedly fell in March. Everyone was sort of anticipating that, raising the big concern whether consumers are spending less, that they're losing the momentum to get out there and shop until they drop. The 0.3% drop in purchases basically follow a little change the prior month. This was from the Commerce Department earlier today. They were expecting, most economists were expecting a 0.1% gain. But even if you look at the 0.1% gain, that's still fairly insignificant, in one of the greatest supposedly economists of the world, the number one economy in the world. So again, you have to look at these items. And what drove the market was China. They came out with better trade numbers. And, everyone was looking at, China's big slowdown since, for the past, 7, 8, 9 months, where they manipulated their currencies down so they could, export more, where they'd be a little bit more competitive. But with these better trade numbers, a sign that the slowdown in their economy may not be as deep as what everyone thought. It recovered stocks all the way from Asia to the U.S. of A. Now, isn't that convenient? And, no one knows what China's markets are doing. And, you hear so many different things. But again, I think everyone embraced, their numbers and their reports that their economy isn't doing so bad because they needed a good day in the stock markets. You have oil growing stronger. We talked about this earlier in the week about Russia and the Saudis getting together to cap oil production with OPEC. They're meeting on the 17th. We've seen some strong numbers in oil since that report. We'll have to see what happens after the meeting. So that impacted the markets. But you know what? They're going to let China come out and say whatever they want in a report. You have hundreds of billions, maybe even trillions of dollars that have flowed out of China and into various parts around the world, particularly the U.S., into real estate, securities, and inflating U.S. securities, inflating the real estate market, People are going to go along with whatever report that comes out of China, if it's good. They had another report coming out that one of their steel companies, they failed to pay bond interest that was due on April 12th. They've had at least 7 corporate bond defaults this year. So how good are things in China? So you have these conflicting reports, but when you have these corporations that can't pay the interest on the bonds, I would have to, really question their trade numbers that they produce. So something else that helped rally the stock market, and this is just, the stock market is so phony. J.P. Morgan Chase, first quarter earnings fell nearly 7%. But you know what? Everyone is cheering because it beat lowered expectations. So who cares if their earnings fell nearly 7%? They beat lowered
expectations. It was a victory because they didn't fall 8%.
They beat the street's expectations. It didn't matter that their profits fell 7%. And it's just what Caterpillar came out, in February, the beginning of March? They said, well, gee, guys, you better lower your expectations because we're not going to beat them. So what does the street do? They lower their expectations. Caterpillar can't, or they'll match them or, be, slightly below, but nothing to shock the markets. And this is how your retirement plans and your hard-earned money that's in paper, this is the fundamentals, you know, where they're just rigged on a daily basis. So, you know, no one knows the truth that's keeping these markets up.
And what are they trying to achieve by rigging the markets and maintaining prices despite fundamentals and real issues of supply and demand? What are they trying to do?
Well, they do get taxes.
No, but what I'm getting to is their objective is to shore up confidence.
Absolutely.
In the public.
But they do get taxes. And you're right, the confidence. Calm.
Yeah, I said confidence. That's what they're trying to do. They say, oh, look, everything's great. The Dow Jones is rising. Everything must be peace in the valley, and we're all going to get rich here anytime, sometime soon. Probably not, as a practical matter. We're probably not going to do that. And here's an article from Bloomberg, and the headline is, Yellen repeats, uncertainty warrants cautious approach by Fed. She's concerned about uncertainty. Now, the reason I bring that up is because if we are, well, let me just read some of the article. It says, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen said the central bank has to move with care as it sets monetary policy to avoid taking decisions that do more harm than good to the U.S. economy. And here she is. She's quoted. She said, we necessarily operate in an environment in which there's a great deal of uncertainty. Right? Now, this is interesting to me because confidence is the essential feature that supports our fiat debt-based monetary system. We need confidence. If there's so much uncertainty that Janet is afraid to make a move right now, how can the public have confidence in the economy or even in the currency? She's concerned about uncertainty. And it's interesting, given that they have been trying to revive the economy since the Great Recession of 2008. That's 8 years they've been at this. And they're still uncertain about what's going on. Now, when you stop and think about that, does this inspire confidence to say, oh, they've got it all under control? No, they haven't been able to figure it out in 8 years. What? This cannot inspire confidence. In such an environment, it makes sense to use risk management approach to identify and avoid the big mistakes. That's one of the reasons I favor a cautious approach. Again, Janet Yellen.
Yeah.
You'd think that the big mistakes were all covered in Economics 101 back in college. However, judging from Yellen's comments, some of the big mistakes are still invisible. They don't even know what the big mistakes are. They're talking about we've got to identify and avoid the big mistakes. Identify. They don't even know what they are at this moment. They are waiting for something in the dark. The term big mistakes means big adverse consequences. I mean, if they're going to do something, they're not going to call it a big mistake unless it has a big adverse consequence, right? If it causes just a little bit of trouble, it's not a big mistake. It's just, you know, a little error. It's not a big mistake means big adverse consequences. That means there's something out there in the dark that Janet Yellen senses but can't yet see or identify. More, that means the economy is not stable, but is still vulnerable to big adverse consequences that flow from big mistakes that have not yet even been identified. What was it, Melody?
Well, I think she sees, and I think it's been identified. They just can't release the information. But yeah, it is big. Today, you had the Federal Reserve and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC. They both issued a joint determinations of flunking banks' plans. Banks' plans, commonly called living wills. What these living wills are, you have the five big banks, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, State Street Corporation, and Bank of New York Mellon. These five too-big-to-fail banks on their plans for a bankruptcy that would not rely on taxpayer money. So I guess these banks are supposed to come up with a plan that if they had to file bankruptcy, that it would not rely on taxpayer money. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, right. What are they going to do? Pray for manna?
No.
We'll just pray and there will be manna falling out of the sky, and then so, we'll all be okay.
So the banks are pretty much just ignoring, out of the Dodd-Frank. It was part of the Dodd-Frank bill that was passed, after the recession. And they have until July 2017 to address most of their shortcomings. And if they don't address the serious deficiencies by October, this coming October, they could face some stricter regulations like higher capital requirements and so forth and whatnot. But what is funny about this article, let me see if I can find it here. Pretty much one of the banks came out and said, well, this is a goal. The goal to end too big to fail and protect the American taxpayer by ending bailouts remains just that, only a goal. You know, it's kind of like my goal wanting to live 150. It's not going to happen. So, it's just,
what they're saying is the taxpayers are going to get stuck for it no matter what happens. You're not going to profit from it. If the banks make a big profit, you don't get any. But if the banks fall on hard times, well, of course, it just stands to reason that Joe Sixpack is going to have to pay the banks to keep them going. Well, the whole thing is just nuts.
Yeah, it is.
And why do we have this problem? It's because the banks are too big to fail. How did they get too big? Because government regulations allowed them to become massive. If these banks had not been allowed to become super banks, essentially, and become so massive in size, all right, so one or two or five of them. They would be broken down, and there might be 500 banks in the place of the five that we talk about being too big to fail. There might be 500. All right, 1, 2, 10 of the 500, they fail, too bad. People invested them lose their money, but the taxpayer doesn't have to make good on it. It's because government regulations allowed these enormous super banks to come into existence that now we are vulnerable, because if they do something really stupid, they could collapse the economy. And nobody wants the economy to be collapsed, and therefore we have to essentially kiss the bankers' backsides, because you can be as stupid as you want as a banker, and we'll back you up. Don't worry about sharing the profits with us, but if you have any losses, that's what we're here for.
But it just goes hand in hand with what you were talking about with Janet Yellen. You have these banks. They're just Band-Aids. The taxpayers are there. And as long as the taxpayers have a job, as long as, they're paying the IRS, as long as there's money going into, going to Washington and so forth, they didn't fix anything. They're not going to fix anything. They can't fix anything.
What needs to be fixed?
Our currency.
That's right.
Our monetary policy.
They're not going to fix any of this stuff
until it collapses.
They store a real money in this country. The system operates on the presumption that they can use these phony, baloney, fiat debt-based dollars, and they can replace gold and silver, and everything will be just right, just great. That is a false premise. The fiat currency cannot replace real money. It can supplant it for a while. It can get away with it for a couple of generations. But in the end, it's fraud. And in the end, it'll blow up in everybody's face, and that's where we're headed. We're coming to a kind of collapse. Coming where? When? I don't know. Nobody knows. It could happen next fall. It might not happen for 5 years. I don't know when it's going to happen. But we are getting closer and closer, and there will be no recovery, there will be no solution to our economic problems until we get back to a real money and abandon the fiat currency, and they won't do that without a collapse. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Going to take a break for a couple more commercials, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Where are we going now, Melody?
Well, this will boost Donald Trump's campaign. You have 36,000, some reports of 40,000 Verizon workers. They walked off the job this morning after failing to reach a new labor agreement. This is the largest strike in the U.S. since Verizon's workers last walked off the job back in 2011. That one involved 45,000 workers, and most of the striking workers service the company's landline phone business, the Fios broadband network, and not the much larger Verizon wireless network. I did hear that they hired folks to continue the working to replace the strikers. I don't know if not permanently, but they have gone without a contract since August, and the list of complaints is a fairly long one, but Verizon has outsourced 5,000 jobs to workers in Mexico, the Philippines, and the Dominican Republic. Verizon is hiring more low-wage, non-union contractors. The main thing is that it's taking good-paying jobs and taking them away from the American public. And another part of their complaint was the pensions. Let me see if I can bring up the number on that. I think they had wanted to put a hold on their pensions.
Well, they think they are the government.
Yeah, really. But so it does involve the jobs going overseas, and it involves their pensions at a time where Verizon is posting record profit. And so they had that many people walk off the job this morning. And we'll see how it affects any type of service. But again, you know, hey, jobs are going overseas. Pension plans are being tinkered with. Promises not being kept.
Well, all of this is part and parcel of a world that is dedicated to more and more efficiency. And what efficiency ultimately means is more money. The reason we become more efficient is in order to cut costs and presumably still sell at the same price, may therefore make a bigger profit. Or if you're a laborer, you're a worker, whatever, you find a machine, equipment, whatever, that allows you to do what you used to do in an eight-hour day, you can do it in a six-hour day and still make as much as you were paid for 8 hours. But the point I'm making is that efficiency is all about the love of money. We're trying to get more money, more money, more money. We become more efficient. We don't care if we're sending jobs over there and some Americans don't have jobs. Screw them. We don't care. We got to get that efficiency, got to make more money, more money, more money. And it just reminds me back, I'm not going to try to evangelize on this, but it reminds me of verse in the Bible that says the love of money is the root of all evil. And to some degree, the love of efficiency, and we all love efficiency. We all want to be more efficient. We all want machines that'll do our work in less time. But as we pursue more efficiency, we are necessarily putting people out of jobs. Now, I'm not arguing that these people should not be put out of jobs, because if we're going to have civilization and we are going to advance, we have to put some people out of jobs, but we got to find something for them to do. And there's a danger here. We pursue the efficiency in order to pursue the almighty dollar, and what do we wind up with? We end up with people rioting because they don't have jobs and they don't have any money. And somewhere along the line, I don't know how to resolve this problem, but I have at least a little bit of understanding of how to recognize the problem and now say, what are we going to do about it, Melody? Well, you can't tell people to stop pursuing efficiency, and yet, if we don't somehow, somebody's got to create something new. If there's, I don't know where the answer is. Do you have an answer, Melody?
No, I don't. I mean, certainly you have someone who wants to bring jobs back to this country by renegotiating all of our trade agreements. And, you know, but that all takes time and it all takes a toll on the country. You get into, it changes how people view things, how people live their lives, how they treat one another. I mean, it's huge impacts.
You know, when we talk about trade agreements, the fundamental idea behind NAFTA and Trans-Pacific Partnership is the argument. I won't say the fundamental idea, but the fundamental argument is that we, by allowing for global free trade, we allow the people who are best able to grow grain, all right, to grow it at the lowest price to provide grain around the world. And the people that are best able to produce steel, they're living in a place where there's plenty of iron ore and they can make steel. They have the ability to make steel at the cheapest price. And then they can sell it all over the world. And every one of the products that we have in the world will, in theory, be produced somewhere at the lowest possible cost.
Yeah, well, how's that working
out for
everyone?
What are they talking about? No, it's working out. It'll work out terrible. It'll be terrible for everyone. But what is the point? The point is even these treaties are based on higher levels of efficiency. And the argument is that we can do all this stuff and save money. We can make more profits and still save money and blah, blah, blah. And again, this is another illustration of this business. Efficiency is all about the love of money. More efficiency means less costs. Sounds like a good idea, but there are people that have to be included. I mean, that's what this comes down to. You're coming to a time when your people are going to sit back and say, look, we either have to include these people or we got to eliminate them. And those are the kinds of choices that are going to face us in the future, if not right now. And nobody wants to think about that, but this is where we're going with this. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I don't think anyone is really looking at the problem where they sit back and say, well, here's a solution. You know, here's a solution to the problem that respects the need for efficiency and the necessity, I think, that people have some sort of gainful employment. Otherwise, we're going to go into a world where, who knows, maybe it's some sort of a paradise where nobody has to work anymore. We become so efficient that we have systems and robots and whatever, and they'll grow the grain, raise the cattle, and run the meatpacking plants and the rest of that sort of thing, and we can just sit around and watch Dancing with the Stars and drink Ripple. You know, maybe we will finally, the American dream will finally be realized, Melody.
You know,
to
address,
sit on the couch and we don't have to work ever.
To address these problems, you will have, you know, one out of the two parties be severely impacted. And, you know, they're not going to choose to address these problems.
Hmm?
So they will allow these problems to eventually address themselves.
Yeah. Which means something's going to collapse.
Something will collapse.
Something is going to collapse, explode. Something is going to break down badly.
Something will break down. We see our infrastructure breaking down in this country. Well, you have this, you know, you have the economies around the world, the infrastructure of these, whether it's the monetary system, whether it's the economies, whether it's the banking system, whatever you want it, but it's the infrastructure of the whole global process, because it wasn't set up properly to absorb everything that's going on. I mean, is it really feasible to even have a global economy, Al?
I don't know. You know, the problem you have is that your economy reflects your culture.
Yes.
Right? And the idea that the global free trade operates on, they say it's all the same. There's no difference between the different cultures in this. No difference. It's all the same. And all we can, it's all just consumers and whatever. And it's not true. There are some cultures, for example, I don't think the Muslim culture can produce an advanced society. I think they are so addicted to their Quran, I don't think they can get into efficiency in a meaningful sense.
And
insofar as we try
to, they don't want to be, but they don't want to be, Al. I mean, let them have their little desert. Let them have desert.
I get that. That's exactly, you're making my argument here. I'm saying they have a culture that makes certain choices. Okay. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying you have to understand that when you make these choices, here's the deal. You wind up living in a mud hut. You understand? On the other hand, if you would like to live in something a little more, I don't know, a little more civilized, then you have to make other choices in terms of your faith, for example, and your culture. And what you're going to, you know, if you're going to bow to Mecca 3, 4, 5 times a day, guess what? This is at least as intrusive as a cigarette break. You know, is this something businesses can afford? I've seen reports, you know, the Muslims at one point, were they were source of algebra, they were the source of great intellectual and scientific discovery, astronomy. They're doing all that. But they have become so inbred, trying to marry their first cousins, as Muhammad did, that they've actually impaired themselves genetically. Mm-hmm. Right? And now they can't. They have reached a point where, I mean, it's a very difficult situation, but if they can't support themselves by means of growing more efficient, how are they going to support themselves? Right? If they can't get into a more advanced society, economy, whatever, how are they going to do it? They become forced to conquer and take and predate.
That isn't anything different than the people of this country. If they can't provide for themselves, what are they going to do? They're going to take. We've seen crime. Crime is beginning to rise. We see the riots happening in various cities for various reasons. But it all comes back to that core of being able to provide, being, you know, working.
Working, making a profit, whatever, and saving and whatever. We have living life. We have lost so many fundamentals because some jackass in government or in the Federal Reserve, they actually think that they have brains enough to run this thing better than the free market. And all they've done is make it worse. They've pushed us to the edge of collapse and oblivion while they insist that, well, let's try, how about, I know, let's try negative interest rates. Who knows? It
and
might
that's
work.
Coming.
They don't even know what's going on. They don't even know what's going on, and they can't admit it. They say, well, how about this? We could try. Let's roll the dice and try this. What's wrong with that approach is they're letting people are going to get hurt badly, badly, badly. Well, the geniuses in Washington, D.C. think they can run. The central planners think they can run this. This is going to wind up like the former Soviet Union. They had all the central planners they could afford. And the central planners finally collapsed their whole country. They had some brilliant idea about communism that lasted for 70, 80 years, and then the whole thing blew up in their face. We're going to see. We have central planners. In the end, they are too dumb to plan what's really going on in this economy. Insofar as they try, all they do is create more problems, and they postpone them. They kick the can down the road, do a good job of sustaining the illusion, but, you know, sooner or later, somebody's going to have to admit that these people are morons.
Well, what's really it's like the global economy has really taken a life of it on its own. It's taken a life of its own. And all these central banks are doing is feeding it. And it has gone way beyond any control. They're just feeding it. And you know what? Temporarily, it's sort of working. You know, and all eyes are to the attention.
Sort of working for who?
Well, that's what I mean. They're for the powerful and the wealthy.
When you say that the global economy has taken on a life of its own, I'm not sure that that's true. What's taken on a life of its own is multinational corporations, and they feed us crap that there's going to be a global economy and we'll all sing kumbaya. But I think it's
which is a bunch of nonsense. The only people
singing kumbaya are the guys that own the multinational corporations. They're making fabulous profits because they can produce products in countries that pay nickels and dimes per hour for labor and then sell it into countries that still have some wealth. And they can make fabulous profits.
Which is part of the life. Maybe that's the heart of the life. And you're right. You have people that are getting wealthier, and they're just stripping the countries of everything that they can get, and not just ours, but every country. And you have all the politicians, you have Washington, not here, but all around the world, that are feeding into it. Mm-hmm. And there's no happy ending.
Why do they feed into it, Melody? Because it bribes them.
Mm-hmm.
They are making money. The politicians are getting a cut of the action. Not a big cut, even.
Well, you know what?
They're getting enough to get by and say, okay, let's pass another Trans-Pacific Partnership. We won't tell anybody what's in it. We'll keep it secret for a number of years, but we'll pass that anyway. Why? Because somebody gave them some money. That's what they'll – and
the whole thing
is just insane. It's wicked, and there's no good come of it.
I think some of the old timers, absolutely. These guys have been in Washington for 30 and 40 years. They need to leave. They need to leave. But I do think some of the newcomers coming in, and you're right, they might still be bribable, but I think they learn how shocking it is. And they're learning there isn't anything they can really do. And
they have to blow the whistle. Somebody has to stand up, speak out, and that's what you can do. But we are out of time, Melody.
We'll get whacked.
Maybe they do, but all that does is bring more to the front. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.